Hi, my name is Ki Huang. I appreciate you guys being here. It's an honor to present for you. I'm going to sort of go over sort of the journey that our software development group went over years sort of maintaining OpenACS based web applications, as long as we're working through the managing technical debt. So just give you a background with our group. We started back in the early 2000s with the OpenACS, well, before it's called OpenACS, ACS 3.x. We were a team within Department of Pharmacology. We worked on the various projects for different researchers. Currently, we're sort of maintaining over 80 plus projects, ranging from the different types of domains, administrative, clinical, research management, data systems. The size has varied from sort of a project taking 3-4 weeks to something with multiple years. And I understand Antonio's pain point with having to upgrade, OpenACS from 5.44. But it's available, we have a 5.22 system that's that probably needs upgrading in an Oracle database. So in the early years, these were some of the challenges that we faced. Most of the, all the hardware, networking, and the cooling system were on-prem, and so we had a single system administrator sort of maintaining all the hardware, as well as upgrading all the database software as well. OS, and that takes a lot of a big lift. At the time, we were sort of getting familiar with OpenACS, and we sort of adopted what considered not so good development practices. So what we ended up doing is that for a project, we would sort of install the necessary OpenACS packages, either from the central repository or sort of in-house ones as well, and then we ended up sort of customizing the set of pages in there, the ADP, or we made changes to the SQL files as well. And that sort of incurred technical debt for our group, because at that point, once you sort of made changes to the package files, you sort of made upgrading a lot more difficult, because since we made changes to the package files directly, if there's an upgrade and it needs to modify a set of pages, it would overwrite those, and then we had to end up sort of going back in and fixing them. Okay. And since those early times, so this is sort of the old development practices, as I mentioned. We were using SVN, and we were installing packages and modifying them locally. And since that time, about 6 or 7 years ago, we were integrated as part of the David Geffen School of Medicine IT group, and as part of that, we were able to leverage sort of enterprise resources in terms of getting access to sort of GitHub, ServiceNow, as well as resources in order to move all our prem up to the AWS cloud. But of course, being part of the enterprise, that sort of incur sort of additional challenges. One is we have more compliance in terms of getting projects started, or moving our code from dev to staging to prod. We have to go through a CAP process. And the more recent, obviously, is the security. That's a big focus, from the university standpoint. Not only does sort of a security violation incur costs, but potentially it could have, because the type of projects we work on, if they have clinical data, and that's another problem. And the type of projects that, that we take on as part of being an enterprise is that they tend to be larger in scope, so they have more business rules and sort of administrative overhead. Also, we're sort of having to deal with integrations with various systems like ServiceNow in order to create tickets or to go through and understand all those API calls. And then recently, you know, with sort of the COVID situation, the work environment changed from sort of most everyone being in person, at least within UCLA IT group, to mainly remote. Okay, and so instead of having to manage, a closet with servers in there, most of the effort and system administration has moved to, to understand how to best optimize the cloud cloud operations, and then be able to evaluate and determine which resources and how to scale it appropriately in order to reduce costs. Okay. So here's sort of our new development process. Currently, we're using GitHub for our code management. Everything's up in the AWS cloud. We're focusing more on developing CI/CD pipelines so that we're able to automate the process of moving our code to various environments, in addition to adding end-to-end testing as part of the process. And we sort of standardize some on our internal software development practices. We'll go over a little bit in detail in later slides. And the project management, we're following an agile process, mainly through Scrum, excuse me. and then being part of a large organization, projects involve, instead of just being our development group, involves different groups in the organization. So there's a project management group, and then we have to go through sort of the risk assessment department, and as well as networking. Okay. And so here, we sort of started these new development practices within the last few years to address the technical debt that we accumulated over the years, as well as to prevent, cut down on new ones. So we'll go a little bit in detail on each of one. Okay. So this is our code pipeline that we're evaluating right now. So look up here. It's sort of the developer finishes the set of features, and it's ready and tested the code locally. It's ready to push the code up to the release branch. So it checks it in, and then there's a GitHub action that triggers the pipeline, and the pipeline pulls the release code and then builds the container with all the resources that are needed. So the code, the Navi server, and then sort of stores the container in this repository. This extra step is optional. It's a flag where, in certain scenarios, we may want a database from sort of a test environment versus something that's from production and we want to test and upgrade. So once we pass the database load, then the ECS service runs the container in what's called a task. And then what happens is that we trigger a script that will run the unit tests, followed by an end-to-end test suite, either currently where we have Selenium as well as Cypress tests. After the end-to-end tests are executed, it generates a set of artifacts, includes sort of a video of sort of screenshots of the running of the code, includes the results of the test scripts, and as well as the Navi server logs, so that the developer, if for a reason the test fails, the developer will be able to go to a website and view it off a browser to see sort of the tests being run and then the results. And then after sort of this delineation, if the test succeeds, we're sort of looking at setting up a process so that code could be moved to production. So it would involve, you know, a person to sort of manually approve it, you know, like a project manager. Project manager, and then, you know, we're trying to determine whether you want to, you know, the type of deployment being a blue, green. Currently, we're doing a rolling deployment where, you know, we would do we would execute the upgrade and then apply the, and then restart the servers. And then one feature that we're heavily using is GitHub submodules. So GitHub submodules allow us to sort of reuse packages that are in the repository, be able to check them out. But the module code is not part of the project repository. The project repository has a reference to the package. So let's take a look at that. So example here is we have Project One. One of the packages it uses is a survey package for the purposes of building forms. And in there, it has a reference to the repository of a release tag of 1.31. At the same time, there could be another project too. In there, it has a reference to the survey package, you know, version 2.35. And so that way, Project 1 and Project 2, they're using a version of the survey package. Developers will not be able to make changes to the package from the project repository itself. If they need to make changes to the survey package, they would have to make the change, create a new release, and then check out that release for the project. Okay, and here's sort of a sample of the what a sort of a dot modules file looks, you know, from within the context of a particular project repository. So then how do, you know, developers, you know, make changes to, you know, customize a package for the purpose of a project? So we've been using the package extension functionality that's available as part of the package management. So in the OpenACS, there's a, in the ACS APM, you could specify that a package extends another package so the developer would create a custom package, let's say for the service form, and they'll extend it. And what happens is that this new service package would have sort of the same set of pages the parameters from the base package. And then the developers would just customize only the set of pages that are relevant for that custom package. And that sort of gives us the flexibility of, one, you know, if we need to, you know, do an upgrade on the base package, we could do that independently of the custom package. And the custom code is isolated or contained within this package. And then another sort of issues that we worked through in the past was, you know, since we have, you know, many small projects, you know, they range from 3 or 4 weeks, the resources for the project was sort of spread across different packages. So, you know, resources, we originally stored in the www directory / some name relative to the URL. And then the changes in sort of, you know, database-wise, it was always stored in the package. So instead of doing that, the practice we do now is for every package, we create a package with the same name, so it's sort of the package acts as a proxy for the project itself. So whatever the package version is, the version of the package, And all the resources that are needed for a project are contained within the package. So, you know, tickle pages, you know, DB changes. And then also, if we need to apply upgrades, it uses the mechanism for that's built into the ACS admin packages. Okay. And another what we sort of learned from the past is we have certain in-house packages that generate content or code pages. So they would consist of, example would be, we have a form package that generates a tickle and ADP for the set of pages for a questionnaire. And what we want that allowed sort of the, we didn't sort of build a WYSIWYG, you know, with where the end user is able to add all sort of the embellishments, the validations. Just they end up just having us do it for them anyways. And so what we did was just generate the tickle and ADP pages, and then the developer would go into those pages and sort of customizing them, add the validation and so forth. And we would write them in sort of the package directory. That's a problem if we have multiple instances of a package, right? So example would be we have, you know, two subsites here. So you think of two different departments, and they have, you know, a set of forms for evaluation. So what we did was we created a package content directory under the project, and then we would have a underneath that a folder to sort of contain all the resources for the package, and then it would be, it would leave it up to sort of the package to determine how to sort of segregate it so that there's not a namespace collision. So in this example, the evaluation forms for surveys for subsite 1 and subsite 2, even though it's the same name, they're stored in different locations. All right, so putting it all together, we currently have a package called Tracker Lite, and it's essentially a, you know, sort of, you know, what we, you know, sort of a package that we built from looking at all our projects from the last, whatever, 20 years, and sort of find the sort of commonality. So typically we have sort of, you know, all these systems I mentioned earlier, you know, clinical, administrative, as well as the research management system. There's always this participant or entity. And there's always sort of the set of attributes that are attached to them. So it would include, let's say, the contact information, the email, their educational level, and then sort of their demographics information. And so we rolled it into the single package, and then there's sort of the aspect of this participant or how are they interacting with these in the system. So the interaction is stored as events, and the events, you know, have a date and time when they serve, when they sort of engaged in that particular event, and then there's an organization for having them be part of programs or, you know, members of groups. So that's, you have sort of the programs there, and then we sort of integrate it with sort of our surveys form builder system, so that way the project could customize the set of fields that are needed for collecting data for that participant. And so that's sort of the base package. And so recently we started on two new projects. One is DIFF, and DIFF is it's built for a client, and essentially it's a data collection for K through eighth grade, and our client provides sort of the data analysis so that the school district could improve their curriculum. As you see, there's, you know, the notion of in the tracker we have students, which are participants, And then we have programs, which are sort of the district or school. And then the events themselves are classrooms, because classrooms are where the students are going to be taking the, or completing the forms. And then the second project where we're leveraging the sort of the tracker light based system, it's for the outreach group within the school of medicine, and their focus is to sort of increase or diversify the potential students to attend the medical school or apply for medical school, and so this system. The system, when the outreach coordinator goes to the event, they would have a QR code, and then the student would scan it in and fill out all the necessary fields, and then submit it, and then it gets stored into the system. And so what happens is then the outreach coordinator comes and looks at sort of the statistics as to, for example, would it be the number of participants that. That live in California, and it looks like, well, there's only about 23%, but they had most of the events in California. Then they could sort of look into the system and figure out what's the reason. It's because maybe they were targeting different schools, what have you. And so same notion. So students are participants, and the events are sort of the outreach event. All right, and thank you, everyone. Any feedback or suggestions would be helpful. Yeah.
Yeah, questions?
Hi, my name is Josue, and I have a question regarding that you mentioned of the use of extension of a package, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How that was managed to create the different pages, even if it was the same package or the main one?
Ask that question again.
Sorry. Yeah. So you mentioned of an extension, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you know how that works? How were you able to make it work? How you were expecting it?
Okay, so what we did was So let's just take an example of a surveys package, and we had one called, let's say, the OpenACS. We want to create a custom project called OpenACS Survey. When we're in the when editing the package, there's an option to extend the package. So you would choose which package you're extending. And then they would, virtually sort of inherit the set of pages that are available in the surveys. And in the ACS, in the admin sitemap, when you create sort of a new instance, it gets mapped to the URL, same as surveys, and all the set of pages that were available in surveys are available in the sort of OACS survey. And then you would, let's say there's a set of pages where you want to customize the look and feel or functionality for your users, you would go and create the page under www directory of the OCS survey, and then that would be the customization, just that particular page or set of pages that you want.
Okay, and is there a difference between the extended of a package versus the embedded of a package?
That's a good question. I don't know. It's one of the questions we bring up here. What's the difference between an embedded package versus the extended package?
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. You mentioned that during the testing you use Selenium?
Selenium and Cypress.
Okay, how do you keep that up to date? Or can you expand a little bit on this? How you use it, to which extent, your experience with it?
Well, we're moving away from Selenium because the setup is a lot harder. So we're using Cypress for writing our test cases. It's it has sort of a recorder, you know, so that you could sort of record a set of screens as you're walking through it, and it generates a JavaScript file that we would go in and modify. So for example, in there it would have, if you're trying to log in, you go to a page and try to log in. There's it's JavaScript code pretty much, and it would set sort of the element ID and the value with the user login. And then there, and then in terms of running the Cypress test, it's a command line, and it has sort of plugins to support different browsers, operating systems as well.